Happy Saturday morning to you, wherever you happen to be on this Saturday morning. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. Beth Duckenberger, along with Rob Hall.
Hi.
Hi.
Happy Saturday.
Hi.
I just went to an estate sale. Have you ever been to an estate sale?
I don't think that I have.
I had never been to one.
I mean, I've always wanted to. I've driven by, and I'm like, hey, that might be cool, but I've never...
It was one part creepy, one part so fun. Like, I was stopping by someone's house.
Now, hold on just a second. Were they equal? Like, was it really one part one and one part the other?
It was.
It wasn't more fun than creepy. It was equally creepy.
My friend lives on the end of a long driveway, and there's just two houses. And I was going to my friend's house, and the other house was having an estate sale. I'm like, what are all these cars doing here? She's like, they're having an estate sale. I'm like, I don't even know what that is exactly. And she's like, well, he died. And he only had one kid in Disneyland State. So they're
selling all the stuff.
So there's these people sitting outside with, like, uniforms in the front of the lawn, and you could make an offer on anything you wanted in the whole entire house. I'm like, oh, my heavens, that's like a treasure hunt. Let's go see. So we went over there, and they had suggested prices on things, but I found this really so gaudy. It was unbelievably cool picture. The frame is, like, ornate and gold and probably 4 inches all the way around this picture. And I was in Paris this year, and I bought a oil painting on the Champs-Élysées from one of those, like, Paris painter wannabes.
Right.
And I was looking for a frame, but it was, like, more expensive to buy the frame than it was to buy the painting. And I was having trouble reconciling all that. And so I saw this really gaudy frame, and I went, oh, my gosh, that's going to be perfect with my Paris picture. I had just heard Nate Berkus, the Oprah Winfrey design guy, who said, you should put things on your walls that bring you a great joy and remind you of a story. And I'm like, this is a story.
Bang, this is it. This is two stories, actually. Okay. It's Paris and the dead guy next door.
So the suggested price was a lot of money on it. And I walked up to the guy at the front, and I said, you are not going to find a single other appreciator of this art. I'd like to buy it for, you know, $5.
Far less than you're asking.
And he's like, sold. Boom.
Really?
So I bought this very cool frame for $5, and I just hung up my Paris picture.
I'm going to wait for you to be on Antiques Roadshow.
I know.
Have you ever seen that show?
I mean, I've enough.
That's the kind of thing where you show up and they're like, oh, well, the painting inside that was attached to the board behind the real
which
painting.
Which I've just left in there.
Right. That's a lost classic. And by the way, the frame is worth more than anything. And so for $5, that's a pretty good deal.
I know. I bought a couple little things. I bought a mirror. And then he had some kind of,
isn't it kind of odd, don't you think, though, that the whole idea of an estate sale?
I was so glad he wasn't there. Because people were walking all around his house, like, placing value and judgment and unsolicited commentary about his cleaning habits and, like, his collection of dishes. And, you know, his wife had been gone. I'm like, praise you for just keeping it all together as long as you did. And
yeah, but all these other people are walking around his house.
I'll take $6.
Man, look at that piece of junk. I'll give you $4 for that. And that's probably, like, something he kept forever because it reminded him of something.
But I was thinking to myself, when Paul says, absent with the body means present with the Lord, and I was praying that he was present with the Lord and far away from the estate.
That's right. Not listening to any comments about any of this stuff.
I know.
That would be a little bit creepy. You're
that was the
around
creepy
some
part.
Other person's house.
Totally.
Saying, hey, I'd like that china cabinet.
And he had
hey.
A heart attack. So, like, he didn't, like, prepare Ooh. His house. I mean,
right.
he was an older man, but he didn't prepare his house. I never met him, but for, you know, the estate sale.
So it was just, like, in its condition? I mean, nobody went in and cleaned it up or anything?
Well, there was no dirty dishes, so somebody did something, but anyway, all that to say. Okay, speaking of Paris, you're going.
I am going to Paris.
I'm so excited for you, and that's not Paris, Kentucky.
No.
That's not Paris, Oklahoma.
Nope.
Where?
Paris, France.
I'm so excited. Going to get on the airplane.
Going to get on the airplane, yep. I won this fabulous, quote-unquote, free trip at an auction at the school where I work was having, like, a celebration auction where they raise money to keep tuition low and that kind of stuff. And so for $50, there were only 300.
That's pretty free.
That's what I thought. But anyway, so there are only 300 chances, right? So I put in one. I just bought
Is
one.
Is that gambling?
Well, I don't
Continue.
Know. My wife thinks it's... She was so mad that I spent $50. Because whenever the lottery gets to $700 million or whatever, I buy a ticket.
You
and she
do?
Thinks
oh,
I'm an
gosh.
Idiot.
Pray for his soul, listeners.
Well, I mean, you know.
Continue on.
It's worth it for me for 24 hours of entertainment. Like, what if I win? Mm-hmm. Right? That's worth $4.
Okay.
Right? So the school was getting $50. So I said, of all the other stuff that's going on here tonight, I'll I'll waste $50.
Okay.
And lo and behold,
they called your name.
They did. The way that it works, or if you care, the way that it works is that they drew four names out of the hat, right, of people who had spent however much money. And then they auctioned off the last ticket. So, in other words, I had a 1 in 300 chance, but if you bought the last ticket, you had a 1 in 5 chance.
Okay. Oh, right? Gosh, it's complicated.
It's complicated?
I'm following.
You follow
yes.
me? Uh-huh. So, there were people who had spent hundreds of dollars getting like 7 or 8 times, you know, my name's in the hat. Well, they drew mine out of the first four. That was worth $50 just there. I should have just ended there.
But
they drew my name out, and I think what was more exciting was the people at my table that I was with they went crazy.
Of course. You want a trip to France.
No, this was just getting picked just to be in the final five. That was crazy. So this poor soul bids like $1,800
heaven help them.
To be the 1 out of 5. So like 2 minutes before, he just spent $1,800, and then they drew my name out.
Oh, goodness.
And so I acted the fool.
You did.
Oh, man. I just sprinted up to the podium and bowed before everyone. I was like, yes. And then it began to creep into my mind that, you know what? I got to pay taxes on this.
Oh, who cares?
Well, I care. It's like $3,500 in taxes for this trip. So anyway.
I'm sorry.
So I'm choosing, despite having to pay $3,500 for my free trip to Paris, which I had no idea that I was going to pay, I'm choosing to say this is going to be awesome.
It is going to be quite the lifetime experience. How many days do you get to be there?
We're only there 5 days. We're staying at this unbelievably expensive hotel.
Okay.
$1,000 a night is the cheapest room.
I hope the sheets are made of gold.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I don't even know how to behave in a hotel like that. They'll know immediately.
Never leave and then no one will know.
They'll know immediately that I'm an imposter. Like, that guy has no idea what to do. So we're staying at this swanky hotel. And we went to Paris one time before for our 10th anniversary. It's been about
the City of Lights.
A bunch of years ago. And so it'll be fun, but I just wasn't planning on it. I just wasn't planning on it. So, yes, Paris in the fall.
I love that for you, and I love that for your wife, and I think that'll be very exciting.
She is very excited.
We when I went, it was January and freezing, so we're like at the top of the Eiffel Tower where it got even more freezing.
The wind is gusting.
Like, isn't this so fun, everybody? So October sounds way more exciting.
Yep, I hope it will be.
I hope you, too, buy a painting from one of the painter wannabes on the Champs-Élysées, you, too, find a really gaudy frame to hang it in.
Yes, I'll be trolling around at all of the estate sales looking for people who have passed away, looking for their left-behind pseudo-treasures.
I'm telling you.
Which I can then offer them in
a really
terribly low number to purchase.
And then you too can be an appreciator of something that everybody else walked by.
Absolutely, I guess so. Hey, two interesting guests.
Very.
Very interesting guests today. Bruce Strom loves lawyers, it says. He happens to be one. He's written a book called Gospel Justice. And he really wants to talk about sort of Good Samaritan lawyers, about people who are really doing the work of the Lord through law and what he calls Good Samaritan lawyers. So he's going to be on first, and then Chris Vallotton is going to be on, and we're going to get into it a little bit.
I think so.
I kind of like it. We're going to be talking about women in leadership in the church. For some reason, a topic worth debating about. I don't know what the debate is.
Writing books about.
I'll just go ahead and be out there. I really don't know what the debate is about. But anyway, he's written a book called Fashioned to Reign. And so you can tell by that side of things that he might be into women in leadership in the church. So we're going to debate that. We're going to talk about that a little bit.
It'll be very exciting.
Absolutely, it'll be exciting. So that's good stuff.
I mean, I think that we have a lot to look forward to. And I think about Christian legal aid. Those are the best stories out there in the moment when people who are at their most vulnerable and mm-hmm. someone comes in to advocate for them. So
yeah.
I really hope that Mr. Bruce has some good stories for us.
I'm sure he will.
Let's
sure he will.
We'll
talk about his book. Hey, we know you're going to want to stick around because those two things sound incredibly interesting, at least to me, and I know they probably will be you too. So, hey, we'll be back in 60 seconds. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we'll be back right after this break.
This past summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India, where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with back-to-back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through Back-to-Back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the Back-to-Back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shailaja. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall along with Beth Kuchenberger. We hope you're having a great, fabulous Saturday morning here.
Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday. Hey, I am really looking forward to this conversation.
I told you, I am too.
Really? Bruce Strom's joining us. He is an attorney, and he's convinced and is convincing us that Jesus loves attorneys. I don't think that's a huge stretch. I'm glad my attorney friends will know that as well. But he has written a book called Gospel Justice, and he'll get into the story. But Bruce has been a successful attorney, but he's kind of turned his heart towards the help and hope for those oppressed by the legal injustice in the justice system. And we're glad to welcome him to the show. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It is wonderful to be with you.
Absolutely.
Bruce, here at Real Life Real Talk, we often talk about justice issues. We've talked to folks at International Justice Mission and all kinds of organizations where God's people kind of stand in the gap there and advocate for those who don't have a voice. And so we were immediately drawn to your title and to your idea. And what will you just educate our listeners a little bit about what is the Gospel Justice Initiative?
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, and I appreciate those wonderful organizations that are out there trying to advance God's purposes in the midst of a broken, fallen world, you know, full of sin and injustice. And so I think the first way that we advance that is through the gospel, the good news that there is a Savior and that the victory is won. And sometimes I think we need to be reminded of that when the days are dark. And so I lead out with the gospel and gospel justice, but justice is critically important, too, I think, to God's heart. And in this country, at least in the United States, you know, you cannot access our justice system without an attorney. And I think most people watch TV and they think that you have the right to a free attorney, but that's only true if you've been charged with a crime. If you're the victim of crime, of fraud, abuse, if you just find yourself caught in the civil justice system, family issues, housing issues, employment issues, you do not have the right to a free attorney. And trying to access our system that is so complex without a lawyer is almost impossible. And people fall through the cracks every day in this country, and they need help, and they need hope that an attorney and a legal aid organization can provide. And I think we can uniquely do that with the love of Christ and in a way that glorifies Christ.
Mm. Now, I know that you use the parable of the Good Samaritan as a framework for your book. Why that story? Why do you think that story resonated with you and perhaps with lawyers in general?
Well, I loved your opening because it's true. I think God does love lawyers, and it's probably a funny thing to think about because we have some of the best jokes out there. And I think that's because, honestly, that's not the first thought that comes to somebody's mind in this country if you talk about a lawyer. Mm. And that's unfortunate. There are wonderful lawyers across this country who are great men and women of faith who are serving the Lord. But I think this provides them with a unique opportunity to incorporate their gifts in a way that has deep meaning for the poor and vulnerable in this country. And I think that there's a system behind them that will help them, that they're willing to serve. It's when they don't have that system that they get a little afraid because I'm asking them to step outside their comfort zone. But the reason the Samaritan resonated with me is because, one, it's a lawyer that asked that question of Jesus. And, two, I think the Samaritan was the most despised person Jesus could think of at the time. You know, the Pharisees accused him of being a Samaritan and demon-possessed. It was that terrible. And people walked around Samaria. And if you wanted to find a perhaps a despised people group in America today, that might actually be the American lawyer. I think that, but the power was when that Samaritan stopped and served that wounded Jewish man, just the impact of that on the audience that heard the story, certainly the lawyer that asked the question, and I think the impact today that a lawyer can have if they stop and they serve their wounded neighbor on the Jericho Road. Every day we see people's lives turned around. We see people crying because of the impact of a lawyer that stopped. And they just didn't expect it. They did not expect the lawyer to give of their time, to really be compassionate, to pray with them, to encourage them, and then walk alongside them. That turns somebody's world upside down, and that is the power of the Samaritan.
You often say in your book that we as believers, and certainly the church, that we failed the injured. How is it particular that you believe we failed it? And even more importantly, what can we do today to remedy that?
Well, thank you. You know, I think we have. I love the church. My father's a pastor. You'd know that from reading the book. My brother's a pastor. I love the church. The church is God's plan in this world. There is a plan A and there is no plan B. It's the church, and I love the church. The church has led in this country in the great areas of education. We started education. We've led in healthcare. We started healthcare. But we have done nothing with the law. And too often we've even separated ourselves from it. And that's unfortunate because the law is another great profession where Christians can have deep influence and impact. And I think it's time for us to reclaim that area. We're starting a little late, but there's every day is a new day. His mercies are new every morning, and we have a new opportunity. So the opportunity for the church, I believe, is to be a beacon in a community, a center, a place where people can come, not just for surface needs, compassion needs that I think the church does well, feeding, clothing, meeting some practical surface issues. But beneath those issues are often an underlying justice issue, the need for child support, the need for wages, things that would restore a person so they don't have to look for that handout, something that's deeper and that helps restore communities and individuals. And I think the church can be that place. If there's an organization that can help them, stand behind them, that's learned the tools, that understands the systems, and can be a professional resource for them. And that organization across the country is a new organization called Gospel Justice Initiative.
Now, I know, Bruce, I used to be a therapist, and I worked at a social service agency that worked with people on a sliding scale, and probably parallel to the kinds of people that you might run into needing legal defense, legal aid. I guess I'm just curious, to church pastors or church people listening out there or lawyers listening out there right now, how do you bridge the gap to take, in your profession, people you run across every day who need support, love, kindness, maybe even financial resources, legal resources? How do you build that gap between churches and the legal profession so that we can work together to support those people who need us most?
Yeah, amen. I think there's wonderful opportunity. I think churches across America are awakening to that opportunity. I think our friends in these ministries that you've mentioned have done an excellent job of raising awareness of justice needs. Even in this country, the human trafficking issue is becoming so prevalent. And I think we're becoming more and more sensitized to the needs within America when we typically have thought overseas. And this includes, you know, elder abuse and exploitation, immigrant abuse, exploitation. There are needs all around us. You know, the most recent report on the poor in America demonstrates that the vast majority of poor no longer live in the city. They live in the suburbs. And I don't think people understand that. And so, truly, when I say these needs are in the neighborhood where church has been placed, it's true. There are legal needs of the poor in cities, in suburbs, and in rural areas. And the opportunity that Gospel Justice Initiative presents is we have a way to train church leaders and individuals within the church, attorney and non-attorney, and how to meet these needs in a practical, transformative way.
We're talking with Bruce Strom about his new book, Gospel Justice, Joining Together to Provide Help and Hope for Those Oppressed by Legal Injustice. It's put out by Moody Publishers.
I think that you are right about the idea that the functional poor doesn't any longer live in an inner city. The functional poor are right in our suburbs. In fact, You write that in a three-year span, 32% of the people in our country experienced at least 2 months of poverty. That's one in three. So if we just did a 360 turn in our driveway, we would see a number of people who are in financial need and are looking somewhere for help, whether it's the infomercial, right, or it's somewhere on the internet. They're looking for help. And if we, the church, can be that beacon for them, that we might draw them into more than just the justice, but we draw them into that gospel justice that you're referencing.
Amen. I think the impact, well, we've seen the impact at Administer Justice, which was the organization I began years ago that's highlighted in the book as well. We see the impact. I see the impact every day as people come to have their needs met and they go to a church. We work out of a lot of churches in the Chicago area. And as I see people go to the church to have practical needs met, you know, I told my father years ago, I said, Dad, a lot of people I see, they're not going to come see you. You're a pastor. But they're not going to come see you. But they will come see me, a lawyer, to have these needs met. And at the time, I have the opportunity to reflect Christ and to help them, perhaps for the first time, and for many of our people, it's the first time that they've heard that there is a God in heaven who loves them, who sent his son Jesus to die for them. And what a powerful message, because so often they are cast aside, especially in this country, as they see such prosperity, and they just feel left out, and they feel left behind, and they feel ignored. What great opportunity to come alongside them, as the Samaritan did for that injured man, and really demonstrate the hope of the gospel while providing some real practical and important legal help.
In just the minute or so we have left, after all of this conversation, I'm just curious, as a successful attorney, what was it like to say, listen, I'm going to kind of leave all that aside and drive for and really begin to form this idea of helping the poorest among us, the most needy among us? What was that like for you?
Here's the greatest joy. Anyone who has taken a leap of faith understands what I am saying. There is massive joy on the other side. The Lord does provide for all of our needs according to his riches and glory. But a lot of us who have resources are afraid. And I was terrified to leave my private practice where I was making significant money and just take a leap of faith to become poor, to serve the poor. And yet there's been no greater joy in my life. And to be able to do that with my entire family and to involve them and to minister together and to see people's lives changed because of overcoming that fear, which took me too long to do, but when I finally said yes to God, overcame that fear and took that leap, it has been a huge joy and privilege and honor to serve the Lord. And it's one that I encourage others to explore. Maybe they don't have to give up their whole job, but they can give up some time, they can give up some resources, and they will be changed when they do so.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bruce, where can folks find the book?
They can find the book at www.gji.org. For any donation amount there, that's Gospel Justice Initiative's website. They can also find a free study guide there, and they can find information on how they could get involved in this ministry. So that's www.gji.org.
Well, Bruce, thanks so much for being with us. Just a great, not only a great story, a personal story of yours, but such a great need in our country and in the church to find a way to build a partnership to help the most needy around us. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being with us. You know, I think about, that's someone who goes, what's in my toolbox? Legal expertise. What's the need I see around me? You know, how can I use what I got with what God has given me in this community that I'm living and serving in? I mean, he's a great example for him. He used his legal expertise, but really, listening audience, what is it that God has given you, and how might you use that to reach the one in three in your community that's struggling with poverty?
Yeah, and a great, even I'm glad I asked that at the end. Even that part, you don't have to give up everything. He did, but you can give up some time. You can give up some resources and say, what am I good at, and how do I begin to help the people around us? So, great story. Gospel Justice, joining together to provide help and hope for those oppressed by legal injustice. Hey, when we come back, Chris Vallotton is going to be on.
Get ready.
He's written a book called Fashion to Reign, Empowering Women to Fulfill Their Divine Destiny. Should be a great and interesting conversation. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Beth Guckenberger, we hope you're having a fabulous Saturday morning, Real Life with Beth and Rob. Beth,
good morning.
September's almost over.
I know. We've been talking about fun things today.
Great stuff today.
Paris estate sales. We've been talking about justice and God, and we've been all, both of us have been waiting for this segment of the show.
You know, this past month, we've had some unbelievably great guests, some great conversation, and I think we're going to end the month with another great conversation. Chris Vallotton is joining us. He's written a book called Fashioned to Reign, Empowering Women to Fulfill Their Divine Destiny. I don't think I'm I'm giving away a secret. It says here in the book, in the garden, the woman was taken out of the man to stand by his side and co-reign with him. Now the world aches for this partnership to be brought back into balance. So I don't think I've given away any secret that what Chris is going to say and what he really feels compelled to tell the rest of us. And I'm really excited to have this conversation. So, Chris, welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be on the show.
Oh, good. I know that this is a controversial topic. It seems to be I'm 48 years old. I've been a Christian since I was 21. This conversation has come up probably every year of my Christian life. It continues to be a controversial topic for some reason. And I guess that compelled you to write about why this book? Why did you pick this topic to write about?
Well, first of all, I have four granddaughters and obviously a wife. And then I have a school of ministry that has about 700 students in it a year, graduates 2,000 students every year. And so it's a ministry school. So I'm pretty invested in this subject. I want to see my daughters and granddaughters live out their dreams. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to see them dream in a small box. I want to see them dream in the God box that God gave them, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's a bummer that women have to be reduced to be validated. Pretty passionate about the subject.
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell, yes.
Chris, I am a speaker, and I often am invited to speak at churches on a Sunday morning during the message time. And some churches are like, you know, total freedom. This is our series. Get up there and share what God's laid on your heart. All the way to the other spectrum, where sometimes the senior pastor has to sit, you know, within several feet of me while I share, or has to tee me up with questions. Or most recently, I was asked to speak from the floor versus the stage so that I wouldn't have a position I shouldn't be in. And so this is a subject that I deal with pretty much every single week. And
wow.
One of my curiosities to you is, I am always deciding it's not really my job to change someone's mind. You know, I usually just kind of quietly listen and then live within the parameters of whatever church I'm visiting in. I want to be respectful of the fact that I have there are ongoing conversations. But I always am kind of hopeful that they're in process, that they haven't just closed the book and they know what they know and they're not going to grow. So I'm curious, do you find that people's views on this can change over time? Have your views on this changed over time? Are we as a church open to the conversation?
You know, first of all, let me answer this in the order that they hit my heart. Have my views changed? Yes, they have. I was raised in a Spanish family and a non-Christian Spanish family, and you know, we had honor for women, but they definitely had, quote, their place. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of oppression around women in the culture I grew up in. And I received Christ when I was 18 years old, and what I was shocked to find is that women were more restricted and more oppressed in the church that I love in the kingdom that Jesus died for than in the world that I grew up in. And mm-hmm. I was shocked. And so, can people change? Yeah, if I didn't believe people could change, I wouldn't write a book. I didn't mm-hmm. write a book just to create a controversy. I wrote a book to change the world, you know, change and you know, this controversy that we have is not just in the church. I mean, it's a cultural experience in most countries where, you know, and as you know, in our country alone, you know, women fought for 72 years just to get the right to vote. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this isn't about, you know, those guys out there. This is about us right here. And I've seen so many times, you know, there are reasons why men hold women into a lower position, if you want to call it suppression, oppression, or whatever. You know, one of the reasons that is most common in church life is that men and women, actually, they don't want to say, well, I'm gonna empower a woman, even though it's against the scripture. I'm not going to break the scriptures. I'm not going to invalidate the scriptures to empower a woman. And they would compare that to, you know, a homosexual life or adultery. Well, I'm not going to say living together is okay because the Bible says it's not, and therefore, you know, I want to be true to the Word. And so, you know, when people read, I hope, hopefully, when they read my book or books like mine, they realize that actually that it's a misunderstanding that women are disempowered in the Bible. Women are very powerful in the Bible, and Jesus speaks right to that oppression in the Bible. And actually, you can empower women to be everything they are called to be, and not be anti the Scripture, or, you know, adding some verses or you know, trying to play, you know, trying to twist the Scripture to make it work. It's actually there in the Bible.
You know, it's interesting. You use a story that is often overlooked in this conversation. Jesus interacting with his mother Mary at the wedding at Cana. People obviously look at it as his first miracle, but there's a cultural context there that you really begin to talk about in your book. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. Well, several things. First of all, you know, before I answer that question, between the book of Malachi and the book of Matthew is 400 years, as we know. The Protestants call it 400 years of silence, where they believe that God didn't speak. In those 400 years, a religion developed called Judaism. Judaism, I always thought, was like the Old Testament practiced when Jesus walked the earth. But that's not true. Judaism is a religion that came out of the Old Covenant, the Covenant of Moses. And the Old Testament, if you added all of the commandments together, you get, I think it's 217 rules, 217 laws. By the time Jesus walked the earth, Judaism had added another 400 laws, and many of those were against women. So, you know, just to put everything in context before we talk about Jesus in relationship with his mother, there was no Pharisees and Sadducees in the Old Testament. That was in Judaism. So Jesus did not walk the earth in what we would think of is Old Testament, Moses gave the law culture. He walked the earth during Judaism, which is why he was always talking about the traditions of the elders and so on and so forth. So in the years that Jesus walked the earth, women were considered second-class citizens. They couldn't own property. They were property. They couldn't even be a witness in a court case. The most famous rabbi of the time said, "I would rather burn the Torah, the Bible, than to teach it to a woman." So this is the culture Jesus emerged in, and so he's interacting with his mother at the wedding. As we know, his mother says they've run out of wine. He says, "It's not my time." The connotation is, "It's not my time to do miracles. It's not my time to be revealed." And his mother says to him, you know, says to the waiter, whatever he says to do, do it. And, you know, my connotation is, you know, how did Mary know that Jesus could make wine? You know, they're out of wine. Literally, they're out of wine. How did Mary know that Jesus can make wine unless he's doing it at home? Because it says it's his first public miracle. The second thing is, Jesus, one of Jesus's, you know, mottos is, "I don't do anything unless I see my Father doing it." And so, you know, Jesus is basically saying, I don't see my Father making wine. And his mother's like, "Well, listen, do what your mother tells you to do." You know, the guy's 30 years old. And she's telling the Son of God, make wine, you know. And it's kind of a funny story, really. But it does show us the impact that Jesus allowed his mother to have on him, you know?
Yeah. Hey, are you able to come back after the break?
Absolutely.
Beautiful. We're talking with Chris Valentin about his new book, Fashioned to Reign, Empowering Women to Fulfill Their Divine Destiny.
And I'm excited after the break. I want to ask him this question that he talks about in his book about the fall and the way that the enemy treats the woman after the fall.
Yeah. Hey, this is Real Life with Beth and Rob. And we'll be back in just 60 seconds. Come join us.
Who's Weaving Your Story? The Story Weaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption, the kind of redemption only God, the great story weaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Story Weaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger.
We hope you're having a Saturday morning.
Hope you're having a great Saturday morning wherever you happen to be. Having a great conversation right now with Chris Vallotton, who's written a book called Fashion to Reign, Empowering Women to Fulfill Their Divine Destiny. And again, just one of these topics that just doesn't seem to go away, but
Absolutely not. But
needs people like Chris to continue to speak into it. So welcome back, Chris. Glad to have you on the show.
Oh, it's great being on the show. Thank you so much for having me.
Yep.
Chris, right before the break, I was just getting ready to ask you a little bit about the role the fall played in the way that the enemy treated the woman. And so just walk me through, what does the enemy's attack look like on the woman today, and how is it different after the fall? How has he kind of targeted her in those ways?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, when they fell, when Adam and Eve fell, you know, there was a curse over the woman, the curse over the serpent, and the curse over the man. Obviously, not quite in that order. The curse over the serpent's very interesting. God says to the serpent, you're going to crawl on your belly and eat dust, which we know. The second part of the curse was, and I'm going to put enmity, which the word there, enmity, means hostility, between you and the woman and between your seed and her seed. And obviously we know that ultimately that was fulfilled in Jesus, because it says you'll bruise his heel, he'll crush your head. And it actually means that he will stomp you so hard that he would bruise his heel. But the interesting part is this. He says, I'll put hostility between you and the woman. That curse was not over the woman. That curse was over the serpent. And so it's really important for us to see that the spearhead of warfare is not against men, it's against women. And that the enemy hates women. When God put men and women in the garden, remember, he took Adam, and the word Adam means man, and he made them male and female. He told them both to subdue the earth, and they co-reigned. After the fall, the curse over the woman was that you will have pain in childbirth, and your husband will rule over you. I think it's really interesting to note this. First of all, the word woman and the word wife in the Hebrew is different. The word husband and the word man are different in the Hebrew. So God did not say... the curse over the woman wasn't, all men will rule you. The curse over the woman was, in marriage, your husband will be the head of you. Before that, they co-reigned together. And so the curse, if you will, even in the Old Testament, was not that men would rule women, but that in covenant, that a husband would be over his wife. And so... What we have now is we have men as a gender over women, and that wasn't even the curse. And we know that Jesus came to break the curse. Galatians chapter 3, he came to break the curse, and so that even that curse needs to be broken. It's broken over men, and the question is, when is it going to be broken over women? But even when women were under the curse, they were not under a curse of all men will rule all women. It was a covenant. When women and men came into a covenant called marriage, the man was put at the head. And so I think that's very interesting. And the way it works the way it's worked out in life is that every single religion finds a way to oppress women. Almost every single culture in the world finds a way to oppress women, from the Muslims to Buddhism to now and sadly to Christianity. Every religion finds a way to make women, to reduce women, to make women less than God's called them to be. And I think it's time for a revolution. I think it's time for us to say Jesus broke the curse at Calvary, and women should co-reign with men as they were designed in the garden.
You know, I can't let you go without, in the last minute or so, without alluding to this. You know, Beth talked about she goes plenty of places to speak, and for in many of those, that the idea that a woman should not have authority over a man, that's in 1 Timothy. That,
yes.
That's there's something about that you talk about that's overlooked in that. Just in the minute or so we have left, give us a little primer on what that is.
Okay, I'll give it to you as quickly as I can. Paul wrote, as we know, 13 letters to 9 different churches. So some churches he wrote several letters to, right? Three, he restricts women, seemingly restricts women in 3 locations. In Ephesus, in Corinth, and in Crete. Those are the only 3 places that Paul writes any kind of restrictions for women. And all 3 of those places have one thing in common. They're Greek cities where the god of the city is a woman, a goddess. As we know, for instance, Ephesus, Diana, Artemis. And so Paul, the only place Paul ever wrote restrictive, policies towards women were in the cities where they made women gods, and actually the men served the women. And the word authority there, by the way, that you should know, there's I think 17 different words for the word authority in the Bible. Paul uses the word this word authority in Timothy, only time it's ever used in the Bible. And one of the definitions means to slap with the back of the hand. And so Paul's not saying, women can't have authority. He's saying specifically in Ephesus, where women actually were in charge of men, he says, I don't allow a woman to have the kind of authority where she rules a man. And we could talk on and on about that, mm-hmm. but there's a great chapter in the Bible. There's a great chapter in the Bible about that. There's a great chapter in the book that yes. takes you through the history, the Greek, the Hebrew. And I can assure you that Paul told each of the recipients of each of the letters who he wanted these letters to be passed on to. Have this letter read to such and such. Send this letter also to so and so. He never had those 3 restrictive letters sent to anybody else outside of their region. And so I propose to you that Paul, if he did restrict women, it was in certain geographic areas where they were made gods in those cities.
Well, Chris, an ongoing conversation within the church and within the culture at large, really, the role of women, the ability for them to find themselves on equal footing with men, as you mentioned, not just in the church, but everywhere. I just really appreciate the voice that you've brought to this ongoing conversation.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Chris.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah,
I just appreciate it, especially in the very beginning of the book when there's some testimonies about people who have benefited in their own life and ministry through your teaching. I think that is, if anybody's thinking about, I wonder if this would make a difference in the community that I live and serve in, those testimonies are enough to just encourage you that certainly the ongoing conversation can bring greater freedom to our faith community. So thank you.
I really appreciate it. Appreciate being on. God bless you.
Yep, blessings to you, Chris. Thanks so much. Well, I'm sure we'll get some messages, some people saying, hey, I'd like to be on the show to talk about the other side of the story, and maybe we'll have those people on. But again, this seems to be an ongoing cultural conversation in the world in general, and certainly one that just doesn't seem to go away in Christian circles either.
Yeah, I just had a good conversation with a senior pastor about a week ago who was telling me that he was concerned that my presence on the pulpit in his church would be a stumbling block for some. And I just said to him, I trust that you have wrestled with the Holy Spirit about this, and this is the conclusion you feel he's led you to, just like I know that other pastors who allow that have wrestled with the same Jesus and have their own conclusions. And it's, to me, it's like many, many, many conversations we have in the church. I had a conversation last week about someone if marriage after divorce is permissible. Another conversation with someone else about the role of alcohol. I mean, I think that these are the kinds of things that we can't be afraid to talk about because we are and should be working out our faith with fear and trembling. And part of that is reading and listening and praying and studying and giving grace to the other side.
When I was a young whippersnapper,
yeah,
and falling in love,
ooh, that was a while ago.
Falling in love with my wife, I remembered going to my future in-law's house to sort of have the talk, you know, like, hey, this is serious and all that kind of stuff. And they invited me over for dinner. They had been praying for their daughter for, you know, 20 some years that she would find some guy worth marrying, you know, and they kind of asked me all those kind of questions, you know, all the, do you think this? Do you believe that? Do you think this? And there were, our particular issue was I was a believer in the gifts for today and they weren't. Mm-hmm. And what I really appreciated about that is I was smart enough, I guess, to answer the way that I believed. And I knew enough about the conversation to also say, I know that you don't believe this because. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I really hope a book like this does. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't agree with the position, I think it's great and a great book to read so you know at least what the other side of that debate is talking about. So often we get into a debate, we just know our side, and we tell everybody else to shut up. Mm-hmm. If you don't agree with Chris, buy the book so you know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And therefore, when you get into discussion, it's not a, I don't want to hear what you have to say. It's like, I know that you're going to say this, and I'm going to say this, and let's talk about this, and we'll move on instead of making it a either-or kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. The church needs this kind of conversation as compared to the just shut up conversation.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday I was approached by a friend who said, our church is considering female elders, and how do you feel about that? And I was like, heavens, I'll have to think about it. I'll have to pray about it. I'll have to study it. And we can't just leave the conversation up for other people to decide. We need to be engaged and decide what it is that we feel like God is convicting us to say and teach and do and be in love.
Well, I hope people have been paying attention today, because if our goal is to spark conversation, we gave them a lot to talk about
we
today.
We gave them a lot to
we
talk about.
We got to talk to Bruce Strom about giving your life away in the defense of the defenseless and in gospel justice, and we just talked about an ongoing controversial deal with the role of women in the church. So, heck, if you're going out tonight, you have plenty to talk about
around
the table.
You sure do. Thanks for being with us this morning, listener. We pray that you have many conversations throughout the day that are inspired.
Yep. Hey, this has been Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall. That's Beth Guckenberger. If you want to recap this show or any of our other shows, you can hit us up on iTunes, and you can hit the podcast. You can find us at reallifewithbethandrob.com. Or hit us up on Facebook as well, Real Life with Beth and Rob. Plenty of places to connect with us. We'd love to connect with you as well. And until next week, we hope you have a great Saturday.